Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bang.
I'm Chapariwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps growing ex bartenders better understand agave spirits, rural Mexico, and taxes.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so today it's the most entertaining episode we've ever done. And the worst of the worst.
Wait a minute,
of the worst.
Ryan's not here.
No, hey, come on. This is even worse than medical advice. This is taxing, Jesus Christ. And against the laws, I have way too much experience with taxing, Señor Lu, for the wrong and the right and the very bad reasons. So
yeah, you and me both.
Right?
And this is tax season here in the U.S. of A. I'm finishing up my third of my four annual tax returns I have to do.
Really? But yeah. You guys have accountants in the U.S., right?
Well, yes, but you're assuming that everybody's going to hire an accountant for everything. And while we use an accountant for the sacred taxes because they're confusing, it just doesn't make sense to use them for 10 Angry Pit Bulls, for my personal one. And we do have accountants, actually, that do it for the foundation that I work for.
Right. No, I'm just saying because, yeah. For example, here in Mexico, and this is where this starts, actually. I think this is a great way to begin this. Mexican taxes are one of the most confounding labyrinths that there has ever existed. I do not know one individual that has regular business that it's able as an individual to make their own taxes.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, so what are we talking about today very specifically? And then we'll get into, because your point's a good one, but very specifically, it was just announced that the state of Oaxaca is adding a 4.5% tax, sales tax, as I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chava.
Sales tax.
To any, what was it, bottled alcoholic beverage.
Yes. And actually, That's interesting because I did not see if it's dependent on ABV.
I didn't see anything.
It applies to beer, to pool, like that. I didn't see that in any of the press releases that they threw out.
Yeah, no, I got the sense that it certainly applies to all spirits, and I got the sense it was all alcohol that you take to drink somewhere, not at the place that you bought it. So, you know, if you're drinking at a restaurant, I think it's, you know, it doesn't apply there.
Yeah,
but again, to your point, okay, so how is this going to affect us, you and I, people who like to drink the agave spirits that are made throughout Mexico, but certainly in Oaxaca?
Okay, so the first answer to that thing is depends where you are. So you, Joven Lu, you are in Chicago, the land of the horrible weather. And I am in Mexico City, the land of beauty and glossy skies. So in your country, the way you pay taxes for alcohol, what is it in Chicago for spirits? How many taxes do you pay?
You know, I'm not 100% certain. I believe the sales tax that I pay here is like 9.5% or 10%.
Get out of here. So, okay, I'm going to give you the really quick. So in Mexico, if I buy a paperclip or if I buy anything, I'm going to pay 16% embedded into there, right?
Wait, hang on. When you say embedded, you mean like literally? Because it's weird. I'm always confused when I go to buy something in Mexico and the price is the price that it's marked. So you're saying they've already figured the taxes in.
Yeah, oh. So we don't like to torture people because we think that's not cool. So we make the addition to stuff right there. I know. We're nice people.
Which I guess means that you're really the onus is, well, I mean, when I'm buying something from a retail store, the onus is still going to be on the store owner. But it feels like there's even more taxation pressure then.
It is, yeah. I mean, yes, yeah, you're not wrong with that. But even on top of that, so you have your 16%.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there's something called YEPS, which is a special tax for certain products that the government has decided that need a special tax. So cigarettes are the more highly taxed. Mm-hmm. So if you want to buy cigarettes or cigars in Mexico, they have 160% special tax on top of them.
Are you saying 160 or 116?
160.
160.
Yes.
God, you get that, and then you get those beautiful pictures on all the packages too.
It is an expensive vice to smoke in this country, unless you are buying handmade artisanal cigars or cigarettes.
Huh.
Which, instead of being taxed at 160, they're taxed at 30.4.
Whoa. Okay. Hey, that's really interesting. Okay, so you're saying something that is an artisanally made cigarette or cigar? Is that right?
Yeah, so the way that it's established in the official document, it's that have been entirely labrados, which is a very poetic word, had been entirely crafted by hand.
Okay, does that include even the rolling paper?
I guess that'll be the consumer crafting them by hand, so I don't think that applies to that.
Well, no, I mean, if I'm a guy who's making artisanal cigarettes, I have to wrap them in something, or even cigars.
I'm sure you can make the point. Yeah, I'm sure you can get to your 30%.
Well, so the reason I'm asking that specific thing is because there's a lot of overlap between, and we really will get back to what this 4.5% tax means, but there is a lot of overlap between what a mescalero would be doing and what, actually, I mean, there's definitely an overlap, but I would argue that the mescalero is doing a lot more work to handcraft that spirit. The only piece that's really not handcrafted is the bottle and the cork and the label.
And they can be. And sometimes
they can be. And sometimes it's just, you know, plastic water bottle. But so why are they not doing the same thing with agave spirits?
This is a question that has exasperated a significant amount of people. So I'm just going to give you the breakup in alcohol. So really quickly, they do not make a distinction between what a very large corporation will do and what a mescalero will do in terms of taxing. So if you are up to 14% alcohol, you're going to pay 26.5 in special tax on top of your 16.
On top of the 16, okay.
So that's for beer, wine, a bunch of wine, whatever. Then if you're from 14 to 20 ABV, you're going to be paying 30%. So your fortified wines, your soju, a bunch of the things that live there.
So now you're again with that value added tax, you're at 16, you're at 46% on the 14 to 20%.
Correct. So it's starting to get weird and horrible, and you hate your life. But then if you are over 20 ABV, you pay the very generous amount of 53%.
Wow. Whether you're 20, is it up to, is it anything above 20? So like 21? 20.5. Wow. Or puntas.
So you're paying 69% at this point.
69 plus, if you happen to be buying it in Oaxaca, the state of Oaxaca, you're going to throw on another 4.5%.
Correct. So you're 73.5 plus, if we have this thing called an income tax. So you get tax of all the income you made during the year.
But you didn't. You didn't make any income. You didn't make any income if you actually paid your taxes. That's crazy.
But you got money to your account. So they're going to tax you on top of that. And
that kind of goes back to the episode we did about bank accounts and why so many of these guys don't have bank accounts.
So they're going to throw in there, like, it depends how much money you make. Maybe, I mean, it's not crazy, but if you add up on top of all of this, it's like 1 to 2.5% on top of everything else. So
well, you know, like that's not a bad income tax, but in essence, it encourages you to go work for somebody else, which kind of encourages you. God, if you're a Mescalero, it encourages you to go work for one of these big companies, these big corporations making a lot of mezcal, so that you're just worrying about your income tax.
Yes. Still, that is a great question, Joven Lou. I don't know how it works if you are just selling, like al granel. I don't know if you're just selling like 1,000 liters at a time. I believe you still need to pay the YIPS.
Oh, that's not what I meant. I'm sorry. Oh. What I meant was, like, literally, it encourages a mezcalero to stop making stuff that he or she can sell and instead go to work for a Zignum, go to the factory and work at Zignum.
Can I give you another alternative?
Well, hey, it's not me, but yeah, please.
So if they were to take the decision to, instead of sell in Mexico, mm-hmm. and rather sell in Chicago, how many taxes do you think they will need to pay?
Well, it's got to be the same, right?
Absolutely not. So are you familiar with this thing called NAFTA?
NAFTA. That's a pillow that you wear when you're flying on an airplane?
No, actually, I don't know what NAFTA stands for.
North American Free Trade Agreement.
Okay, cool. So you get that, and so
had that. It's gone now. There's a whole different agreement.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. It's been
completely different. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But within these treatments, there's things or products that Mexico can sell to the U.S. that have zero taxes attached to them. Avocado is a great example. Hand blown. Glass pieces, a lot of craft lives in this range, and mezcal is no different. Tequila is not different.
Okay, so this is a little confusing to me, maybe a lot confusing. So let's break this down, right? So we did this actually with
Luis Niño de Rivera.
Yeah, look at that. I did that. I said off the top of my head from Amaras, where he gave us the spreadsheet showing the differences between exporting and selling domestically your mezcal. Right?
And even considering the chitcher system.
Right. And, you know, you just did a back of an envelope calculation, and it showed what?
Well, he did. I didn't do anything. He did. Yeah, I'm just reading what he sent us. So their brand margin versus brand invoice price, so their gross sales, if they sell in Mexico, they get a margin of 19%.
They make 19% of what they've sold it for wholesale, correct?
Correct.
That's what you mean by that? Okay, 19%. And so this, okay, so now if, let's keep going with this. So then in the USA, what's the margin?
Even after going through that treacher system, that the distributor wholesale margin, the importer margin, the, like, all of that.
The shipping, our own, like, duties and taxes coming into the USA.
Correct, all of that. That is 53% what they do.
53%. So the piece that confounds me, like, I understand I show up at I'm not going to name names because I don't want the tax guys going after them, but I show up at a Palenque and I purchase a couple of liters to go. I'm going to get a significantly lower price buying it in Mexico than I am buying it back here at, you know, liquor store. But which makes sense to me. But then when I buy bottles at liquor stores in Mexico, which I do, the price is still lower. So how is that?
Yeah, so I guess that usually what the brands that you bought in a liquor store in Mexico are Alipus or Del Maguey or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And it's still significantly cheaper in Mexico.
Significantly cheaper? No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like how much is an Alipus in the U.S.?
So Alipus in the U.S. is, depending on the expression you get, right? They've got a broad range, but the one that I tend to buy is around $60, I think, in the U.S., and I can usually find it for closer to $35 in Mexico, or $40.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's that's maybe what they're doing, only 19% here too, because it's not only the tax that are killing them, but they also need to sell it for cheaper.
Oh, you know what? That could be. I hadn't even considered that. Yeah, right. So that's why it's 19%, because people don't have as much money to spend on booze in Mexico as they do here.
And even like you're being killed by taxes. And on top of that, you don't have a market, like, you know, you're competing with bottles that are significantly cheaper. And honestly, I mean, like, it's there's so many beautiful mezcal brands. So many of the best producers of Mexico, they don't sell in Mexico. You cannot find a bunch of the guys worth. You cannot find in any liquor store in Mexico.
At the Mercado in Mercado Benito Juarez Mercado in south of the Zocalo.
Yes, but they are not.
My guess is that's a different taxation system.
Yes. Which again, just beep the brand that we said, Roy.
Yeah, there you go. So you know, it's interesting. So then let's get back to the actual premise of this episode, which is, what is adding a 4.5% tax going to in the state of Oaxaca going to do? And I, you know, my extrapolation of everything we've just said is, it's going to make it harder for Mexicans to access really good agave spirits.
It's the stupidest thing ever. And on top of that, they've made an announcement that certified mezcal is not going to pay that. Just all of the other alcohols, but not certified mezcal.
Which
in a way, it's like what they're trying to say to the, I guess the message they're trying to send is like, okay, maybe they made the math, and what it costs to be certified is 4.5% if you were taxed. So they're saying like, if you are certified, you're not going to be taxed. Like that money that you will be spending in certification, you're going to save in taxation. I guess that's sort of the, maybe what they're thinking. Or maybe it's just like, it's a price. You know, it's like you're being a good mezcal producer. You follow all the rules that we place. So you shall be exempt of wow. this silly tax. Wow. But yeah, like honestly, this is... the crazy thing is, this just makes it more appealing to not sell in Mexico.
Well, it also, I mean, that's one side of it. But the other side is, you know, when I think about you and I driving around through rural Oaxaca, how many mezcaleros have we met who thought they had to certify their agave spirits as mezcal in order to export?
And Michoacán, they took the Congress to get the DO, and nobody uses it because they thought they needed the DO to export.
Right. And so, you know, when I mean, it feels to me like the net effect of this, at least within Oaxaca, could be to move more producers into the certified system. And, you know, we're seeing a trend. It's not a huge trend, but we're seeing a trend of some of the more traditional producers moving away from certification because certification is actually interrupting their ability to protect their cultural heritage. And it feels like the 4.5% tax might actually interrupt cultural heritage in Oaxaca.
Yes, that, but another thing that I don't believe that it's stressed enough is when you're certifying, say, Lou gets to your Palenque and Lou has money to buy your stuff right there. And he asks you, do you have 300 liters that I can take out of your Palenque tomorrow? And you have it and you want to make the sale now, but it's not certified and you need it certified. The amount of time that it can take for that to happen can be so long that Lou doesn't want your mezcal anymore. And he's going to go to another Palenque that has it certified. So it's
not
only...
Are you saying that Lou is impatient? That doesn't sound like
I
Lou.
I am saying that the gringos that I know might have, you know, like certain calendars that are... So...
For sure.
Like even, I mean, in a very cynical way, even forget about cultural heritage. Just think about running a business, having to accommodate some kids that might come to certify your thing this week or maybe 3 days from now. They might send you the stickers or not. I mean, they are not necessarily clockwork. And even the ones that do a good job, you still have to wait and accommodate for them. So even that, it's just not ideal, you know?
So the end result really is, regardless of how you look at it, is that it's far more likely that this tax is going to force more families away from following their cultural heritage.
Well,
in Oaxaca.
Not even that. Like, well, That can be one consequence. I think the real consequence that I see here, it's this is like gentrification of agave spirits. What it's making it, it's just everybody that that has the contacts or the capacities, they're going to realize that by selling in the U.S., they can do the thing that they love. They can just spirit, they can be proud of, and sell it for a more fair amount of money.
So wait, hang on. So you're saying the end result is I have a better selection in Chicago than you've got in Mexico City?
That is already the case.
Okay, I'm in for that. I'm like that works for me.
Okay,
hey, what are Chava, you? Anytime you want to drink, you are welcome to come up and visit in Chicago.
It makes it really hard, Lou, but I have a good batch of I have a bunch of good stuff in my house, fortunately, that I bought legally in Chicago and I brought back to Mexico City, of course. because that's how I did it. And
we're trying to wrap, and we should wrap because this has been a long episode. But if you were to carry mezcal back from Chicago into Mexico, don't you have to declare it and pay taxes?
Yes, I believe so.
And of course, you're a law-abiding citizen, so you would do that.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, and I think on that note, Chava, we can call this episode overdone.
This is super terrible. Okay, sorry to everyone. Adios, señor Lu.
Hasta pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lu Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen. Thank you.